Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. You can find the club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Phil Bronstein, Executive Vice President, Editor-at-Large for the San Francisco Chronicle, and I'll be moderating today's program. And now it is my pleasure, with a huge dose of awe, to introduce our very special guest. He's a media mogul, philanthropist, and author of a new memoir, Call Me Ted, right here. There's really no need to say a lot about Ted Turner. You know, history and Ted have all made us all aware of his pretty astonishing accomplishments. And while he's been called the mouth from the South and the batty billionaire, he's also created CNN and TBS and other stations which revolutionized broadcast media. And you could say revolutionized the world in many ways. His teams won the America's Cup and the World Series, though not the same teams. And he got canned by a huge company, Time Warner, that later tanked and made him look even better. He's also a major philanthropist, and his current business enterprise is Ted's Montana Grill in Columbus, Ohio, although he tells me earlier that it's also in Montana. And you could say that our guest is an actual maverick and agent of change even before it became vogue. So when I knew I was going to interview Ted Turner, I asked a friend of mine, you know, I'm interviewing Ted Turner. How should I approach it? He said, well, look for things you have in common. He says, you've both been in the media, and you've both been married to Hollywood actresses. And just go from there. And I thought about it, and I thought, no, that's not going to work. First of all, Jane Fonda has won 2 Academy Awards. And the problems of scale continue from there, especially after you've read his book. I would like to ask you to join me in welcoming Ted Turner today. Can I call you Ted?
I'm a little hard of hearing, and you're speaking to the audience. It'd be better if we had let's try it like this. I can hear better.
Can I call you Ted?
I may ask you to repeat the quote, but you're going to read the questions anyway. They're not going to come from the audience when we get to that.
We have audience questions, but they're on cards,
okay,
so we'll read them. First of all, happy birthday. Today is Ted Turner's 70th birthday.
Thank you.
Now, here are some people you share that distinction with. Actor Alan Young from Mr. Ed is 89. Larry King is 75. Dick Cavett is 72. Calvin Klein, 66. And it goes from there. Meg Ryan, Jodie Foster. That's pretty impressive. So I want to ask you, because it's your birthday, what do you know at 70 that you didn't know at 65?
I don't know. I haven't been 70 long enough to really notice much of a difference. All I've been doing is being on talk shows.
So how many interviews have you done?
It's the fourth one today.
Fourth one today.
I did 5 yesterday, and I'm doing 5 today.
So when you were 69, what had you learned?
That I didn't know
that
at 68?
You didn't know at 60. Or 68, sure. Because you're a guy who learns a lot.
I have to say, I do feel like that as I've grown older, and because I study and read a lot, mainly about the subjects that I'm most interested in now, I feel like I am learning more all the time. And I enjoy that. I enjoy the feeling of knowing more than I knew the year before. And I think that comes along with older age. And supposedly, you know, you should be getting wiser as well as older, and it does help cushion getting older.
Well, I want to go back to...
But I'm not sure I'm wiser. I just feel a little wiser, you know what I mean?
I think feeling it is what counts, right? Let's go back to the America's Cup for a quote that I pulled out from way back then. When you won the America's Cup the first time out, here's what you said. "There'll never be a time in my life as good as this time. I'm so hot, just tell my guys to stand by me with their umbrellas turned upside down to catch the stuff that falls off me. My biggest problem is getting a big head." I'm guessing that maybe that wasn't the best time you were going to have in your life.
It was pretty good. You know, I mean, if you talk to an old baseball player who's retired and ask him what the best moment in his life was, if he was on a world championship team, he would say winning the World Series. I bet you most people would.
Right.
And so I'm not really any different than any sports figure.
So what's the second best moment of your life?
Well, I really enjoyed my wedding night.
Which one?
All three of them. It's pretty hard to beat that.
Well, and the thing about my biggest problem is getting a big head. How's that going?
I'm doing okay with that. There's nothing like losing your job and your fortune and your wife to give you a little humility.
Now, I know somebody who worked for you during that period. It was a tough period. But you walked in a room at a meeting, they said, and said, "You know, I just lost $1 million today."
A million?
A billion dollars. See, this is what I'm... $1 billion today.
There is a difference. I have trouble...
Well, no.
...keeping it straight. I have trouble keeping it straight, too. I get thousands mixed up with millions and millions, billions, and now... We're dealing with trillions. You know, we're $10 trillion in debt, the United States is. How much debt Russia has?
How much?
None. They paid off their last $60 billion of debt last year with their oil earnings.
Well, you've also talked about how houses in Japan, that we have just
so
a consumption.
Really, you know, you could almost say that Russia's richer than the United States now, even though their standard of living is not as high as ours, but they're living within their means and saving money, and we're spending more than we're making. And I think that's what's caused this. It's the basis of this financial turmoil that we're facing now.
Well, you also mentioned somewhere I saw that in Japan, the houses are a third the size of the houses we have here.
Yeah.
Now you have 2 million acres that you own.
But I don't have any real big houses on it. and those that was an investment that I made to. Increase the size of my buffalo herd. I was doing a whole lot of things. I was preserving the land from development and from overgrazing and for wildlife, and I was increasing the size of my bison herd, which I sell in my restaurants, which were doing pretty well before the recession, but now they're suffering along with the whole restaurant business. And I want to, while I'm talking about restaurants, just for a second, just like to share the thought with everyone that if we're going to bail out any business in America, shouldn't we think about the restaurant business before we do the auto industry? Because, you know, you can go 3 or 4 years at least with your old car if you have to, but you can't go more than 3 days without food. You know, I think if you had to choose, think about it. If we had to give up the restaurant industry completely or give up the auto industry completely, which one would you rather have? Everybody that... For restaurants, raise their hand. People that are for automobiles. Remember, we can all... Oh, there are two guys. Okay, boy, that's something. We need to call Congress and let them know that.
But the trouble is
the restaurant guys are so busy working in their restaurants till midnight every night, they don't have time to go to Washington and appear on all these panels saying why they need to be bailed out.
On private jets, apparently, according to today's
story. Congressmen and senators don't know how tough it is in the restaurant business. You know, they go home at 6 o'clock at night.
Well, why don't you go back to Washington? Because I think
I'm
you'd
going.
Be
I'm going to go work in my restaurant this evening, just as soon as I'm done with this show.
But you're not big on it. You hate bailouts. You don't like the idea of bailouts, right?
I don't. I don't like. Nobody bailed me out when I was struggling. It's in the book. I struggled all the time. I didn't have any money, but I got it from without going to the government. In fact, I gave the U.S. government. I wrote them a check and didn't ask for anything in return except that they help pay the UN dues. I gave him a check for $32 million. I think it's the largest. I gave it to the State Department, and I wrote U.S. State Department on the check because I did sign that check, and my name's on it, and I got a picture of it going to the State Department.
So, you know, you talked about your wedding night. Hmm? So you talked about your wedding night, so I think, you know, that opens up the topic.
The topic of what?
Well, let me ask the question.
This looks like an adult crowd, though.
I'm quoting.
Except
for the guys with the cars.
What's our rating?
All right, here's in the book you say, privately, I used to tell people I wanted to become the world's greatest sailor, businessman, and lover all at the same time. Now, the book is all about being a great businessman and a sailor. Where's the other part?
I left it out.
Well,
that's my private life. I don't want to embarrass. I've got 5 children, 11 grandchildren. I don't want to, you know, have their other kids at school say, "We read something about your daddy." You know, that's my own private business. What happens behind the closed doors of a person's bedroom is their own business. And besides, who cares?
I guess that shut me down. Well, I mean, let me ask you then just one basic question. Did you succeed there as well?
Did I what?
Did you succeed there as well?
There's no trophy for the world's greatest lover. There's no way to
I'm just asking a subjective opinion.
There's no way to, you know, if you win the World Series, you scored more runs than the other guy. Nobody knows. It's a qualitative, subjective decision who's the world's greatest lover.
All right.
Nobody knows.
Well, all right.
Everybody in here could be the world's greatest lover, as far as they know.
Can we see a show of hands? We can do a show of hands on
that. How many people in here would like to think they're in the running? See, we're all the world's greatest lovers.
There was a sports analyst at TNT who gave an interview a while ago, and he said that you were getting ready for the Goodwill Games, and you had a trip to Seattle. Do you remember this? You were going to Seattle, I think, the year before the Goodwill Games to kind of launch things.
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
And he said that you were supposed to fly, and you were going to give the speech in Seattle, and you stopped the plane in Montana. You said, I have something to do. I have something I have to do. And the guy said, well, come on, you're the speaker. You're supposed to be the main speaker. You can't leave me here. And you said, no, I got something. He said, you got to tell me what it is. And he said, well, I've always been interested in Jane Fonda, and she's going to be at my Montana ranch, and I want to go have a visit with her. So he said, okay, I understand that. And he flew on to Seattle and stood up there for you and did the thing. And he said, but when he got back to Atlanta, TBS was running Jane Fonda Week on the movies. Now, is that a true story or is that not a true story?
I don't think that's a true story. And if it was, it would just be coincidental because it takes a long time to promote, you know, and program something like that. You couldn't do it in just a couple of day turnaround.
That's an interesting coincidence. Did you get caught up in Obama mania?
To somewhat.
What was your thinking going in? I mean, I know because you said you talked about preventing political dummies.
I think it was time for change. I like that slogan.
You told Charlie Rose. You
said, time for a big change.
You said you didn't want to see any more dummies as political leaders.
I think we'd do better off with some smart. I think we're better off if we have a period of time now where we have some smart leadership. I hope. It'll take a little time to know, but for sure, because he hasn't really been tested yet. And besides, I am concerned, like a lot of people, that we'll get too enthusiastic and expect too much because he's only one man, and this the problems that we have didn't occur overnight. They took years of spending more than we were making to get in this hole that we're in debt-wise, and so there's only so much that he can do. But I think he's going to be good for us. No matter whatever he does is going to be better than what we have had the last 8 years.
So given all the things you've accomplished in your life, if you were suddenly put in charge of making sure that we didn't have preventing dummies in politics, What would you do? What would you change?
Well, I think, you know, the American electorate's pretty smart, and we made the best choice available this time. So I think we're going to have some good governance. Whether they can solve all the financial problems or not, I don't know. But I think we'll do better internationally. We'll have repair our fences in the rest of the world, which is important to me because I'm an internationalist. I support the UN and I've been all over the world, and I treated everybody with respect, dignity, and friendliness. And I made friends with the Russians and the Chinese back when the Cold War was still going. Did the goodwill games with the partnership with the Russians, and I tried to make friends everywhere. And I know you can do it if you go out into the world and you look for enemies. You'll find them everywhere. If you go out looking for friends, you'll find them everywhere, too. And a lot of times, they're the same people. It's just how you approach them. Like, if you just meet somebody and say, in another country, you know, I really don't like it here. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like your art. I don't like your culture. I don't like your music. I don't like your women. And I don't like you either. I don't like the food. Don't like the music. If you do that, the guy's going to punch you right in the nose. You're talking about World War III. You can start it in about 5 minutes. But if you come in and say, wow, I just can't believe I should have come here a long time ago. This is the greatest place. The music's wonderful. The food's delicious. Your scenery is outstanding. I love your museums and your opera. And, you know, and everybody's so nice here. I'm thinking about moving here. I mean, they'll just give you a big hug, you know, and welcome you in. And that's the way I think. I believe in soft power. I don't like bombing. I don't think you do anything by bombing somebody except make them mad. You know, and even if you do kill them, you know, you're killing people you don't even know. I mean, it's just and a lot of times you're killing children and grandparents and older folks like us. You know, who don't fight and don't want to. You know, we've already got the fight knocked out of us.
Now you talked about the sort of persuasive skills, right? You go to a foreign country.
And try and make friends.
You try and make friends. Now, you know, your book is filled with these moments where you were right on the brink of bankruptcy, disaster, even death. And, you know, somehow you managed, often with counterintuitive thinking.
I was surrounded by friends, too. And having friends around when you're in dangerous circumstances helps because your friends will try and help you. Your enemies will push you over the edge if you're on the edge.
Now, some of those friends were bankers, right? Some of those friends were bankers.
Well, the bankers, I always had trouble with them.
But you know, you had some goodwill going on there with bankers.
Well, I used some venture capital, too. There were quite a few times when we were too risky for the banks. They said, Ted, we just can't lend you any more money.
Now, there's some moments in your book where you do some interesting things at business meetings, including a few times getting down on your hands and knees, for instance, with RCA when you were trying to get the satellite.
Now, I don't remember. I know I got down on my hands and knees a few times to make my point.
How much of success is great salesmanship and enthusiasm and confidence?
Well, I'd like to think I was a good salesman.
But, I mean, if you had to divvy up, what percentage is the idea and what percentage is selling the idea?
Oh, I always tried to make my product and my ideas as good as I possibly could, and then I went out and tried to sell them. I think part of my success is that I didn't try and market bad products. I had excellent product, and then I could go out and market it. So I made sure that everything was as good as I thought I could make it before I went out and tried to sell it.
Now, CNN was one of those things you sold. You had to sell, and you almost didn't make it. I mean, you were spending more than you had, and things were looking grim. But ultimately, it worked. And
right.
It worked very successfully. And this year, I think the ratings, you talked about this with Will Blitzer, who wasn't shy about saying it. The ratings were great during the election. I think CNN beat all. Do you still think of it as yours, CNN? Do you still think of it as yours, CNN?
A little bit.
Yeah?
I watch it a lot.
And you said there are some things you would change. What would you change about CNN?
Well, I'd like to see them do a little. I think their political coverage was excellent, is excellent. And I'd like to see them a little more, do more international coverage. I think they've gone with it when they're not running politics, they run a little too much sensationalism. And I'd like to see them do more reporting on the environment. But generally, I still think they're, you know, the best of the group.
Now, there's a guy in the morning, Tony Harris. Do you watch him?
I'm sorry?
Tony Harris, the anchor.
Tony Harris?
Yeah.
What's he an anchor on?
CNN.
What time is he on?
He's on in the morning. Well, morning California time.
Of course, the morning here is the middle of the day. I spend most of my time in the Eastern time zone. It's a different world out here.
Well, it is a different world out here.
It is.
Which reminds me, same-sex marriage.
It's a good world. I like it out here.
Well, you know that there was a big battle about same-sex marriage out here recently, right, during the elections?
You know what? I can't hear what you're saying.
Do you know that there was a battle about same-sex marriage?
Same-sex marriage.
Yeah, there was a big political battle out here.
It's okay in California, right?
Well, it's up in the air, I'd say, right? Would
a little
you say
spooky?
Up in the air?
I that's not one of my key issues. My key issues are nuclear weapons that endanger everyone, gay or not, and global warming and overpopulation and environmental destruction. Those are the things that imperil all of humanity are the things that I'm most worried about. But what do you want me to say about gay marriages?
If you want to take a position.
If you want to get married, it's fine with me.
Okay, there you go. I don't know if that's we've made news here.
If you'll let me marry whoever I want to, you can marry whoever you want to, you know.
As many times as you want to.
As many times as you can afford.
Well, like a lot of things, I think going in, you don't always know what you're going to end up having to afford. You know, you talk a lot about in the book about your motivation to start another network because you talked about the gratuitous sex and violence on network TV at the time. Now, do you watch TNT now?
Watch what?
TNT?
Not really.
Because they have a show called The Closer that starts with someone getting murdered right at the beginning of the show every week. And now they have something called Saving Grace with Holly Hunter, where she's having sex in a bathroom stall, swearing like a sailor.
That's what I was against.
Okay, so how much does it bug you that the creations that you...
I don't watch much television except for CNN. That's about... Maybe I look at the other news channels occasionally. I have to say I've been watching Bloomberg a little bit because of the financial crisis, and CNN's financial coverage isn't what it used to be.
Now, Rupert Murdoch,
yeah.
Speaking of press barons, you've had a kind of interesting relationship with him. Where is that now? I think you pretty much called him the devil at one point.
We sort of made peace. When I read in the paper, wherever I saw it, that he was going green with News Corp, I sent him a congratulatory letter because whenever I read about any corporate chieftain that tries to take his company green, I send him a note because I think it's good to give people positive encouragement. And he wrote me back, and I he's 75 now, and I don't think he's near it. It's hard to be too dangerous at 75.
How about 70?
I'm at 70, and I know I'm not near as dangerous as I used to be either.
So
I basically, he and I buried the hatchet. We had lunch at Ted's Montana Grill in New York, and now he was the only guy I really didn't like, so not that I really like him a lot, but, you know, I can tolerate him. And so it's, and I just out of curiosity, is there anybody in this room that really doesn't like me? See, the whole idea is to be popular, you know. The person with the most friends wins. That's what about international, that's my look at the international world. I think if you've got nobody but friends, then you don't have to worry about terrorists, because if the terrorists are your friends and everybody else is too, who's going to, It's only people that don't like you that want to kill you, you know? And they've got to not like you a lot, because most people want to like people, you know? Remember Barbara Streisand's song, "People Who Need People Are the Luckiest People in the World"? That's the kind of song I like to sing when I walk down the street. I don't sing "Deutschland über alles," you know.
Now, I'm a little tempted, because on Charlie Rose, you actually did sing.
What?
On Charlie Rose, you actually, what about it? You did sing.
I could hear him. These machines are not very good for having a conversation. What about Charlie Rose?
You sang a couple of songs on this show.
I can sing a little bit.
Well, would you like to?
You want me to sing?
Yeah.
All right, I'll sing "My Old Kentucky Home." That's one of my favorites, from Stephen Foster. The sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. It's summer, the cotton is high. The corn stands ripe in the meadow in the vale. And the birds make music all the day. The young folks play on the little cabin floor, all happy, all merry and bright. By and by, hard times come a-knocking at the door. Then my old Kentucky home, good night. Weep no more, my lady. Oh, weep no more today. We will sing one song for the old Kentucky home, for the old Kentucky home so far away.
Yay!
And can I give you one little poem about one of my favorite subjects, which is integrity, something that's somewhat missing in today's business arena. But you know, one thing about me too, I never cheated, and I never cheat. You never read any newspaper articles about me being indicted for insider trading or all that kind of stuff, you know, or not paying my taxes. This is about honor, and it's from, I think it's Richard II or Richard III by Shakespeare, and it goes like this. My honor is my life, we live in one. Take honor from me, and my life is done. Then pray, my liege, my honor let me try. For that I live, and for that will I die.
I'm tempted to just have you sing and recite poetry for the rest of the time.
I can quote more poetry and I can sing more songs. I could be an entertainer, and I was. How many of y'all seen the movie Gettysburg? Okay, I made that movie. You know, it wouldn't have been made without me.
Well, you also made some commercials in the early days of television that were pretty funny.
I did. We made some shows, but we didn't. The closer's been made after I left the company. But it gets good ratings. I know that because I read that somewhere. But if it's that violent, I don't like it. Or is it violence or sex? I can't remember.
Well, it's one or the other for sure. Sometimes both.
Well, that's you know, you got to have some sex and violence. But you know, I like to think that I live in a GP world, not an R-rated world.
Well, I think you're one of those people that can make your own, so you can live in a GP world. Although I'm not entirely sure that that's accurate. You're not telling us the private stuff, which is okay. That's all right. You mentioned death recently, just a few minutes ago. So let me bring up newspapers. 30 years ago, you said newspapers were going to die.
That's
now,
right.
You know, one could say only your timing was off, not the fact of it, but I'm in newspapers.
I didn't say when they were going to die. I said sometime in the future. I was right on. I didn't say they were going to die the day after tomorrow.
Well, what do you think now?
They're going. They're actually going right. I was talking to a friend of mine who's in the newspaper business, and he says you can't give a newspaper away now.
So what went wrong? I mean, you saw it 30 years ago.
Well, what went wrong basically is the newspapers were an antiquated way to distribute information, just like the horse and buggy was an antiquated way to of transportation. I love horses myself, and I ride them all the time, but I don't ride them seriously. You know, I just ride them for fun. And newspapers, you know, you have to cut down the big forest, which is not good today, and it's expensive. And then you have to make paper, then you have to ship the paper out, then you have to, you know, gather the news and then print it on the papers, and then the papers are delivered by trucks and by people sticking it, you know, it's got to be hand-carried around when you can get the same information a day earlier on your BlackBerry or on your computer, and you get it instantaneously, and there's no solid waste and no expense to do it. You just send it through the air wireless. I mean, newspapers are kind of like telephone booths. Were you in the telephone booth business? You know, it's hard to find anybody. Anybody here in the telephone booth business? That's not a good. It's not a good business, and neither are newspapers.
Now your
newspapers are gone.
Now your friend Rupert doesn't agree with that. He thinks newspapers.
Rupert
are not
doesn't gone. Know.
All right. If you were,
but I'll bet you his stock is way down. And, you know, it's. I don't know exactly, but I read, you know, a lot of rich people have lost a lot of money during the last. Everybody's lost money. Is there anybody here that in the last 6 months his portfolio is worth more today than it was 6 months ago? Short seller. You probably, even gold went down, right? Everything went down. I've got a lot of artwork. How many people have artwork in here? Older people, right? Well, the artwork's gone down. Sotheby's had an auction last week in New York, and half the paintings didn't even have an offer anybody. And land's going down. How many people own land, you know? Anyway, land is going down. I mean, you try to sell it. Like my real estate broker in Montana said, I said, how are we doing on the land business? He said, not so well. He said, you don't have to buy a ranch, you know? Anybody here feel like they have to buy a ranch? Because I've got some. I got a bunch of them. But at any rate, at least the land's worth something. You know, I don't know how much. You know, but now your house, you better sell it fast if you're thinking about it, because it's going to go down more. At least that's what I read. So, I hope not, though.
So you've lost a lot in the last.
I've lost a lot, but I was mostly in Treasury bills because I got so scared when I, with the AOL merger, when I lost 80% of what I had. You know, I just figured there's nothing worse than being old and broke. You know, that's not good. It's one thing to be broke and young because you got your whole life in front of you and you can make it again. But when you get, you know, close to 70, you know, nobody will hire you. That's why I had to start the restaurant business. I needed another job. I was concerned about my Social Security. I collect my Social Security check. But I keep hearing that, and particularly with all these bailouts and everything, that makes the government, you know, they might just send you an IOU, you know, and not be able to, because it's not fiscally sound. The retirement plan here in America, it's not funded. It's an unfunded pension plan. Unlike the congressmen, they have a funded pension plan, but us citizens, we're just sucking air, you know? There's nothing behind it. So it's very, very scary.
I understand. It was probably
you can't count on Social Security. And if you're a General Motors worker, but I was watching this morning, or an automobile worker, and you got a pension, if the auto countries go bankrupt, the people will lose their pensions, or maybe they'll be reduced. And I had some friends at Delta Airlines when they went bankrupt, and that happened to them. I mean, you know, so just having a pension plan doesn't necessarily mean you're safe. I mean, there's no safe place right now. And just like the very fact that how many people own gold? What, there's a lady. Why don't you raise your hand higher? Are you not proud about it? Because you're betting against everything when you buy gold. You know, you're betting against America, you're free enterprise, capitalism. You think
wait, where's that part about making friends? You're supposed to be.
Back in when Carter was president, I bought some gold, and I bought it at 400 and I sold it at 800. I was the luckiest in the world. But then I thought about it. I felt guilty about it, having gold, because I was betting against the system, and I never bought gold again. Besides, it's bad for the environment. Gold mining, they knock a whole mountain down to get an ounce of gold. It's crazy.
Well, I mean...
But I do like gold. I have some in my teeth.
I understand that it's probably scary to go from a net worth of $10 billion, which you had sort of at the height of time.
That was just for a brief moment.
That was a brief moment to, you know, one and change or two or whatever.
Well, but maybe less, depending on what the land's worth.
You're not. When you say you're scared, you're not talking about for you personally.
Well, I'm concerned. I'm worried that we'll lose everything. I worry about that at night. I mean, because the way things are going, we could be in another depression pretty soon. I'm trying to look it up to see if there's any place where there's no definition of where a recession ends and a depression starts. So we'll have to come up with. I'm working on a definition for us.
Well, good, because we'll find out on CNN, I'm sure. But
no, because I have nothing to say about CNN anymore, unfortunately.
Now, are you still you talk a lot in the book about you just have to get up and move on when things happen.
When you're hit by adversity, you've got to just tough it out. You know what I mean? Just like you did in sports when you played football or whatever, you just got to tough it out, suck it in, and tough it out.
But you still talk about Time Warner. I've heard it in a lot of interviews. And Jerry Levin and how you got treated and what happened, you haven't quite let that one go.
Well, I just got a letter from Jerry this morning. He just read the book, and he liked it a lot. And he's got a chapter in there on his own in one of those chapters that
he says
my
you're
co-author
not speaking.
Asked him to say what he wanted to.
But he says you're not speaking. Was that
we haven't spoken in about 6 or 7 years. Since
do you want to invite him?
He got me fired. He fired me, and then I got him fired too. On the way out.
Are you going to invite him to the grill for
lunch?
Well,
he's done a lousy job anyway. So.
Are you going to invite him to the grill for lunch?
He was responsible for the AOL merger.
Right. No, I remember that. So, are you going to invite him for lunch at the grill? Are we looking to have reconciliation?
I'm not really enemies with him. I just haven't run into him. He's out here in L.A. too. Jerry, you're not here in the audience, are you? He might have snuck in.
He was the guy who raised his hand on the gold question. Now
I should have sent him an invitation, but I forgot.
You also said you talk about revenge. You've had some revenge in your heart at times.
Now I have, but I've gotten over it.
So you don't feel because they say revenge is like drinking poison, waiting for the other guy to die.
I wish him well. I do. I mean, you know, just revenge doesn't do you any good, you know.
So if you were a media entrepreneur today, first of all.
If I still was a media entrepreneur.
What would you be doing?
Well, I wouldn't be here. I'd be working.
But what would you do? What would you do to have a successful media business?
I don't know. I'm not getting paid to worry about that anymore. When I got paid to worry about it, I worried about it. But when I'm out of it, I'm worried about nuclear weapons. That's what I'm worried about. Let's get rid of them completely right away. And everybody. Something could go wrong. That's what I'm concerned about. Remember a couple of years ago, we had a B-52 bomber take off from Nebraska, unbeknownst to the crew. They had improperly, mistakenly loaded 6 hydrogen bombs on the plane that were armed and ready to fire, and they thought they were dummies. But the dummies were the people that put them on there. It turned out, because the armed forces are having trouble attracting really intelligent people. So we've got these super weapons that are being handled, there's a lot of problems with it, I can tell you, if you read about it.
So now you and Sam Nunn, you're working with Sam Nunn on the nuclear issues,
yes.
Right? What have you done, you and former Senator Nunn, and what has your organization done?
Well, one thing we did is we raised several million dollars of our own money and helped pay the United States government $3 million or whatever it was, $5 million, and they put up $10 million. To take the highly enriched uranium that was in Yugoslavia back to Russia and give it to the Russians, who took it. There's so much of it around now, it wasn't worth that much money. But it's worth a lot. The terrorists would have liked to have had it, and it's a lot safer in Russia than it was in Yugoslavia. It was being wasn't being watched over very much. And there's a lot of nuclear material in the world that's not being properly supervised. And there are terrorists Some of them are trying to get their hands on it, and if they do, they'll make a bomb and blow up New York or Los Angeles or Moscow, and I don't want to see that happen. I have friends living in all those towns.
Now, I'm going to paraphrase a question from the audience, because it's kind of like if you read the book, you know.
Can you imagine blowing up Disneyland? Wouldn't that be terrible? And all the studios, what would we do for movies? I'm serious.
I don't have an answer to that question.
And it would also blow you up, too.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm thinking
about
that.
And all the people in this room. It wouldn't blow me up if L.A. gets it, but if Atlanta got it, I'd get it, too, you know? That's why I want to get rid of them.
So because of that crusade that you're on and a number of other things you're doing, you know, against the war, I mean, you started out, you were kind of a hellraiser in school. You born again, as you say, many times, baptized
several
once by
times.
Billy Graham, seven times, came from a very conservative
background. You only have to be born again once, though, they tell me.
Well,
but,
did it
but
work?
We had so many evangelists come and preach to us that it was hard to just stop at one, because the enthusiasm, you know, you get on a roll, and it's really kind of nice.
Well, the question was, I'm looking for it, but basically is, how did you go from being a hellraiser in your youth?
I wasn't a hellraiser. Well, a little bit.
I read that in the book.
I was a heckraiser.
A heckraiser, sorry.
Remember, I live in a GP world.
And how did you go from that?
PG world, I'm sorry.
What did you say, GP?
Yeah, that's wrong. But I don't want to live in an R-rated world.
How did that shift happen? Because it's almost, not only did you go from being, you know, a heck raiser, getting in trouble a fair amount, you know, feuding with your dad, to wildly successful businessman, but you also went from being what seemed to be a conservative Republican. Were you ever a conservative Republican? You grew up in that
background. My father, that's the way I was raised.
And now it's kind of
like, he thought
like
Harry Truman and Franklin Roosevelt were communists.
Right. And now,
and he told me, he said, son, he said, the communists are going to take over. He fought in World War II. He said, the communists are going to win. And he said, when they do, they're going to shoot anybody with over $50. So the next 30 years, I never carried more than $49 in my wallet. I swear. I mean.
So you went from that
to a wild-eyed liberal.
Wild-eyed liberal.
No, I'm not.
I consider
myself a wild-eyed progressive.
Progressive, okay.
Because
well, you'd fit
a lot of
people
don't like liberals, but they haven't figured out what to do with progressives yet.
Now, you told one of your friends once that you wanted to run for and be elected president.
Yeah, but then I talked to my wife about it, and Jane, you know, her husband, Tom Hayden, ran for Senate here in California, and she said, I knocked on every door in California, you know, trying to get him elected, and she said, I'm not going to do it again. She said, if you run for president, I'm leaving. So I didn't run, and she left anyway.
So are you sorry you didn't run?
I just, you know, but you can't run for president if your wife doesn't want to. You know, the first lady's got to want to be first lady. Of course, it would have been hard to get elected with her as a wife anyway.
Look, if
she's considered a little too liberal for a lot of people.
If a guy whose middle name is Hussein can get elected president, you know, as he says, anything is possible.
Besides, I didn't have the proper experience anyway. You know, you should have at least one term in the Senate before you run for president. or one term as governor of Alaska.
Well, now you, I read
Schwarzenegger now, he's been governor of California. He'd probably make a good presidential candidate.
Can't do it. Foreign
well,
born.
Reagan did it. You know, movie star, governor of California, president.
Foreign born, can't do it. He's Schwarzenegger's foreign born.
Maybe, what country was he from? Austria?
Austria, yeah.
Why don't we take Austria and make it part of the United States? Then it'd be okay. We could bomb the Austrians instead of the Iraqis.
I was going to say, I don't think the Ted Turner charm offensive would
necessarily
work.
They were allied with the Germans anyway. It would just be kind of payback time.
Now, you mentioned Sarah Palin.
I did not.
Well,
you I've been asked by my publisher not to criticize any politicians.
Okay, so the dummy thing was just for generic reference.
I'm just having fun. I've been doing so many interviews, I'm getting a little
interview drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, in your book, you almost became a taxidermist, right?
I did.
You could have been responsible for that bear that was behind her in those photo
opportunities. I never mounted a bear, just a squirrel.
All right, here we got to get to some audience questions here, because that's what people are here to ask questions and get it. But what advice would you give to young people who want to be as successful as you've been?
Successful in what?
Successful. As successful.
Just be successful?
As you've been. As successful as you've been. What's your advice to young people?
Like in one line?
No, you can sing if you want.
Well, you got to read the whole book, and then you'll know how to be successful. That's what it is about how to be successful. But I can't do it in one. When I get asked by college students, you know, they want the quick one-liner to success, I say, early to bed, early to rise, work like hell, and advertise. But that's a bit simplistic.
That seemed to work for you quite well. Talk about the Nuclear Threat Initiative. This is from the audience also, and its current work. Can nuclear weapons really be eliminated from the face of the earth?
What's the question? Because I just can't hear you.
The Nuclear Threat Initiative.
I heard that. But the question at the end.
Can nuclear weapons ever really be eliminated from the face of the earth?
You can get rid of them. That doesn't mean that somebody can't make them again, make one or two or three. But we'd be a lot safer with one or two or three than we are with 25,000 on hair trigger alert like we have now.
All right. Here's another audience question. Is the United Nations still relevant?
Yes. Just like the federal government is, even though it could have been better the last 8 years, it was still better than no government at all. You go to Sudan or Somalia, they don't have functioning governments. You know, failed states, there are more of them all the time. So you have to have, and there are certain things that federal governments like the U.S. government can't do. Like they can't come up by themselves with a plan to combat global warming because you got to have China and India and the rest of the world on board. And that's true with regulating the oceans and dealing with refugees on an international basis and dealing with diseases like polio and measles and malaria. There's a lot of things that we need the United Nations for.
Here's another audience question. Talk about greed in America. How much money is too much money for one person to have?
Well, I don't think there is too much, you know, if you're doing good things with it. That's just personal. I mean, capitalism has one big flaw that we're allowing to occur that overstates how well we think we're doing, and that's the GDP, or the GNP, gross national product. It's cooking the books. It's like it's not realistic because we don't debit the environmental destruction that's going on to our environment. And if we did that, we wouldn't show a positive financial situation. We show that we're spending more of our environmental capital than we're making with our automobiles and our manufacturing and all the stuff that we're building. But we need to do that. We need to start debiting the environmental destruction from the GDP all over the world. And then we'll be able to see how we're doing really instead of giving us a false sense that we're doing well when we're not. Thank you.
Here's another.
Lukewarm applause is better than none at all. I didn't. And
you'll,
that's
you'll
good
have
because,
another chance.
You know, I'm just starting to really say that. And I know it's people got to think about it for a while. But that's good, though, because if we think about it, it'll be good. There's a new book that's out about it that I just finished reading by Gus Seth, who's at Yale. What's the name of the bridge across?
Anybody know?
The Bridge to Nowhere.
No,
that's not it. Have you got it with you, honey? It's my girlfriend's got a copy. I just gave it to her after I read it. Oh, you don't have it. You left it back at the hotel room. Oh. Well, anyway.
Well, while you're searching for it,
it's got a bridge in the title.
Bridge to Nowhere?
No.
No, that's the Sarah Palin thing. I'm supposed to sorry, George, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, and we're talking with Ted Turner. I'm supposed to be saying that every once in a while. Here's a question from the audience. Ted, you served your country in Vietnam.
I didn't serve in Vietnam.
I'm just asking the question the way it's written.
Oh, is that a question?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
No, but the question
I was in the service.
The question is,
I was in service when the Cuban Missile Crisis hit. I was too old for Vietnam and too young for Korea.
Okay. With today's national challenges, how can the new Obama administration challenge young people today to service for the nation? In other words, how can young people best serve their country?
I like the Job Corps and the Peace Corps. I like those. I thought those are good programs.
So you said you were scared a little while ago and nervous about some things. I was kind of surprised to hear you say in an interview that you're taking some meds for anxiety, because medication for anxiety.
Anxiety?
Yeah.
What about anxiety?
That you're taking medication. You take medication.
I don't take medication for anxiety.
Never had that.
I did, but I was improperly diagnosed by a quack psychiatrist. And
Did you get a second opinion?
I do my medical work at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, and the head of the psychiatry department, there's a friend of mine, he told me I was okay. Well, you don't know sometimes, you know. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. I just came up with that one.
That was pretty good.
Here's one I came up with that has nothing to do with what we're talking about up here, but might get you another little laugh. Let's see. Life is like a grade B movie. You don't want to walk out in the middle of it, but you wouldn't want to sit through it again.
Well, speaking of things you don't want to sit through again, you said that the Time Warner merger was as bad as the war in Iraq. Now, I'm sure you were exaggerating.
The Time Warner merger with AOL.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
You said it was the stupidest move you've ever seen. We've seen some stupid
moves
since then. In
business that I've been associated with.
And if you had stayed on the board and then they hadn't left, I mean, Jerry Levin still says he didn't fire you, right?
Jerry Levin what?
Still says he didn't fire. You weren't fired.
But I was.
All right, but if you hadn't been, what would you have done differently for Time Warner?
Well, if I had been running the place, I would not have done the AOL merger. I would have merged with NBC, which hasn't grown that much, but would have been a lot better than the AOL merger.
Now, who would you say, if you look around, are you familiar with young entrepreneurs, the Google guys?
Yeah, I've met them.
So, who's the new age Ted Turner? Who's the contemporary Ted Turner?
I don't know. They're pretty close. I mean, they're very successful, but it's early in their careers. I think it's too early to pick. It's like trying with them. It'd be like saying who's going to win the World Series next year, you know, in June. You don't know yet.
Have you Googled yourself?
I a little bit.
How's that go for you?
I'm pretty weak in the computer area, I've got to say. I look over people's shoulders, and I know they got some maps. They got good maps.
Well, your restaurant
That's
better
important.
Be on there. Your restaurant better be on there, right?
Yeah, you can find restaurants with a Google map.
Now, do you pay attention to all the social networking stuff, YouTube and Facebook and all that kind of thing?
I don't use that.
You've never been on YouTube?
Nope. Not personally.
Right.
I do email. My secretary types them up and sends them to me. I'm stuck in the old newspaper days.
Yeah, you already said what's going to happen to those.
Just like the newspaper industry.
Right. So Do you pay attention to your image? Are you concerned about your image in the world? Do you think about how you're perceived by people? Because you talk about, you know, you want people to like you.
No, I don't do polls.
Yeah? Well, that's what, you know, that's one of the things you can do with
Google. I had a friend named Don LaHusky. He was from Duluth, Minnesota, and he was living in Atlanta. And his family was all up in Duluth. And I said, LaHusky, one morning to him, I said, you know, here you are in Atlanta, your family's up in Duluth. I said, you know what you are? He said, no, what am I? I said, you're poles apart.
Can we get some lukewarm applause on that one? Yes. There's a really interesting moment, many interesting moments in your book, but there was one about your dad, and you had a complicated relationship with your dad.
Yes, I think quite a few people do.
Yeah, most people do. But he wrote you a pretty scathing letter when you were at Brown and you wanted to major in the classics. He didn't like that very much.
That's right.
And he said, the subjects you wanted to study, and you quote the letter in the book, might give you a community of interest with an isolated few impractical dreamers, which is sort of interesting because that's impractical dreamers is what one of the things you were and led to your success. But he also says you were rapidly becoming a jackass. Now, that seemed pretty harsh, but then you had the letter printed in the school publication.
I'm sorry?
I said you then had the letter published in the school newspaper.
I was friends with the publisher of the paper.
Yeah.
And I showed him the letter. He said, can I publish it? And I said, sure. Because I thought it was an interesting observation my father made, because there are a lot of people that that think you should take business courses in college. And that was what he wanted me to do, is take business courses instead of classics. But I really learned a lot from the classics, about leadership and about war. And I looked at business and sport as it was a war where you didn't kill people, you played by the rules, but you were at war and you were trying to win. And that's what I did in my life. I tried to win. And I think my classical education helped that. And that's why I put that letter in the book, just to show that there's another side to it. Because my father mentioned some good points in there.
Really? Because it seemed a little bit like finger in the eye.
I didn't agree with him.
Yeah.
But that's another thing. You can still be successful and disagree with your father on some things and still be close to him. And because my father, when I was a young man, he was my best friend. I mean, the only reason he wasn't my best friend when I was an older man is he wasn't around, because when he died, I was 24.
Now, when you were 24 and that happened, and your father took his life,
right?
He had made a business deal with a competitor.
With a friend.
Well, a friend and associate, but basically handing over a big chunk of the billboard business, was what your dad was in and what you took over. So your first job, it struck me, it's pretty striking in there. Your first real job without your dad around was to try and get this guy to rescind the deal, right?
Right.
Now, that had to have been pretty intense for a 24-year-old.
Well, first I asked him, and he said no. So I decided I would try and see if I could undermine the company badly enough to where he'd back off.
That's the war thing you're talking about.
That's right.
Yeah.
I started out at war.
Now, you said in the book that your father...
But nobody got hurt.
Well, you got the business back.
Yeah, I got the business back, and it was no skin off his nose, really. He didn't need it. I did.
You said your father also taught you that men by their nature are polygamous. Do you believe that?
My father what? I heard polygamy. What about it? I think I did.
You said your father also taught you that men by nature are polygamous.
That was his opinion.
What's your opinion?
I think it's up in the air. Depends on the circumstances. Depends on the circumstances.
Can you give me an example?
Well, I told my children, after, you know, studying it very carefully, that I thought monogamy was probably the best road to happiness. Don't even get an applause for that. But there's a lot to be said for polygamy, too.
Your relationship with your kids.
I think it's a win-win situation. I never thought of that before.
Polygamy is a win-win situation?
Polygamy and monogamy, you know.
I'm not sure you can do both.
Well, you can, I guess. I don't know. I never really thought about it.
Your relationship with your kids was interesting to follow in the book and to see what they said about you. Obviously, they have a lot of respect for you, but also you weren't around very much.
When I was around, we had a lot of quality time. And when I took them to school in the morning in my little Toyota, as I came through the kitchen to get them to get in the car so I could take them to school, I would sing, "Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to school we go," you know, like the Seven Dwarves. And they followed me right out like humpy, grumpy, and, and so it was, I made it fun for them, you know. And then later, I'd sing, you know, "Ho, ho, I ho, I ho, it's off to work we go," just like the Seven Dwarves did in Snow White. And so they'd follow me out singing along, too. So off to work we went, you know. And that's good because you want people to like to go to work, little young people, and like to go to school.
Well, one of your sons said that, you know, when you did show up, it was a lot of fun.
You
said you needed a vacation from the vacation that they'd have with you.
Well, we had a lot of fun together.
How's your relationship these days with your kids?
Great.
Has it changed? Has it altered over the years?
Well, my youngest turns 40 next spring.
Well, kids is a relative term.
No, they're not kids anymore. They're adults.
Which of your children do you think is most like you?
I don't like to pick them out. They're all like me, and they're all like themselves.
What do you see of yourself in your kids? What do you see of yourself in your kids?
Well, I love them.
But, like, what character traits of yours do you see in them?
I don't know. I mean, that's irrelevant.
Okay. Irrelevant. Here's an audience question. What does free market capitalism mean to you?
Well, it's going to be sorely tested right now because without the proper regulations, you know, our economy kind of spun out of control, and we're trying to correct it now, and I hope that we'll be successful. There's no question it was a whole lot better system than communism. Communism was an abject failure. But we'll have to see what we end up with when this recession is over. Because there's a good chance we'll have more regulations than we had before. So the capitalism will be, maybe it won't be quite as free market as it was before. But I always was taught, you know, that free market capitalism was the best way to go. But there are excesses that, call into question whether we shouldn't have more rules and regulations. I mean, because, for instance, the government buying into private companies is not free market capitalism. So it's really, I don't really know, I'm not an economist, and I don't really know that much about it except my own personal observations.
All right, one last question.
Aha, the last question.
What do you want to be doing at 75?
75? I don't know. I haven't. I hope America's free and at peace.
And you?
Free and at peace.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to Ted Turner, media mogul and philanthropist and author of, don't forget to get it on your way out, Call Me Ted. And we also thank our audiences here on the radio. I'm Phil Bronstein, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned. Thank you all very much.